ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
ओम नमो भगवते
वासुदेवाय
ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
Chaitanya Charitamrita, Adila, Chapter 4, The Confidential Reasons for the Lord's Appearance. Of course, Chaitanya Charitamrita is full of verses from Srimad Bhagavatam, as well as the literature of the Goswamis and greatest devotees like Kavi Karnapur, Prabodhananda Saraswati, like that. We'll be chanting a verse from the Bhagavatam. Remember, we've been discussing love versus lust and how lust is for the satisfaction of your own senses and love is for the satisfaction of Krishna's senses. The basic definition is given by Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami. A verse that we should remember, because our deepest motivation is love. We want to exercise our loving propensity. This is at the root of our psychology. How to love, who to love, why to love. Not so much a question of where, but just somehow or other let the love go on. Now, you can really clear up a lot of your ambiguity and confusion in life if you can come face to face with this love thing. It's most powerful. It can appear to be even more powerful than the desire for food and water. Indeed, people can have food and water, but if they don't feel they have love or that they are able to love, they're very depressed. And they'll indeed want to commit suicide. This loving propensity is very, very powerful, and we must know how to deal with it. I've explained before that it is true that Krishna consciousness, bhakti yoga, is the love religion. But what that love is beyond the range of our material senses. As devotees progress more and more in bhakti, they start to understand that there is a dimension of love beyond the physical, beyond the emotional. They get that realization through devotional service, that there is a much more intense and pure kind of love that binds. And that kind of love is far beyond the physical and mental plane. Only through devotional service do you get a glimpse of that. So remember the key verse by Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami. Atmendriya priti vancha tare bole kam Krishnendriya priti itcha dore premanam. The desire to gratify one's own senses is kama, lust, but the desire to please the senses of Lord Krishna is prema, love. We explained the other day how pleasing the senses is an eternal reality. You'll never get away from pleasing someone's senses. The simple question is, whose senses are you trying to please? Reality means pleasing Krishna's senses. Illusion means pleasing your own senses. And, of course, your own senses include the senses of those who you deem are in relation to your bodily and mental existence. We spoke the other day about Krishna's intimate affairs with his pure devotees. How it has nothing to do with material nature, material bodies, material emotions, material contaminations. And therefore, devotees require spiritual advancement to properly appreciate Krishna's pastimes. Otherwise, out of envy, we can deny the Supreme Lord the very thing we're so eager to have in this world. What are we so eager to have in this world? Beautiful, loving exchanges. Wonderful reciprocation. Emotional enthrallment. Complete absorption in loving affairs. This is what conditioned souls want, and they seek these things in the material realm of material bodies, laws of material nature. Why do you deny this in the Supreme Lord? What you want so much, so intensely, you don't want Krishna to have? Why turn up your nose and think, oh, this is mythology, this is Krishna Leela, Krishna and the gopis, their loving affairs? You won't want someone to consider your loving affairs to be mythology. Your feeble, foolish attempts at loving affairs, well, they're quite real and important. And when the inevitable failure comes, there's great tragedy. Why do we want to deny Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the Supreme Absolute Truth, this sphere of activities? Everything comes from Krishna. The only reason why it's there in the material world is because it's there in the spiritual world. But in the spiritual world, in Krishna's personal world, these loving affairs have not one drop of material contamination. They are not subject to the laws of material nature. There's no material bodies and no material exchanges. Krishna's reciprocation with his pure devotees is spotless. But in conditioned life, you only know about contaminated exchanges. Therefore, without training, you'll look at Krishna's pastimes with contaminated vision, based on what you've experienced in the contaminated world. Therefore, we very submissively and humbly and carefully approach Krishna's pastimes. Today we're going to discuss how it is that Krishna's dearest devotees, his most intimate devotees, the gopis, do not do anything for their own pleasure. Even some activities would apparently be for their own pleasure. Just like yesterday when we were viewing the Kali Yuga pictures. It was commented that, you know, for ladies to put their hair in such ways, it can cost $100. They do that in order to feel desired, to feel important, to feel that they're the center of attraction. But when the gopis dress themselves perfectly, they're not doing it for their own ego. They're simply doing it to please Krishna. This is one theme we'll discuss. Another theme we'll discuss is Krishna's apparently leaving the gopis in the forest in Vrindavan, apparently being cruel. And we'll discuss Krishna's explanation. And then finally, we'll discuss how Krishna's intimate devotees in Vrindavan They have no desire for their own happiness, yet they enjoy more than Krishna. Their happiness is more than Krishna's happiness, even though they don't desire it at all, and they're simply thinking of the happiness of Krishna. So this is all bhakti mysticism, the highest mysticism of bhakti yoga. So we'll chant the verse from Bhagavatam. This is 10th canto, chapter 32, verse 21. And it's there in the Chaitanya Charitamrita. Evaṁ marattho jita loka veda. Svānam hivo mayanuvrittaye bala. Maya paroksham bhajatati rohitam. Ma suyatam mahata tat priyam priya. The end of the second line and the end of the fourth line, when you see that dot under the AH, then you it's it doesn't have to be so pronounced, but it definitely should be there. So it's not just bala or pya. It's bala, pya. Evaṁ marattho jita loka veda. Svānāṁ hivo maya nuvrittaye bala. Maya paroksham bhajata tirohitam. Ma suyatam mahata tat priyam priya. Evaṁ marattho jita loka veda. Svānāṁ hivo maya nuvrittaye bala. Taye bala. Maya paroksham bhajatati rohitam. Ma suyatam mahata tat priyam priya. Evam. Thus. Mat artha. For me, ujjita, rejected, loka, popular customs, veda, Vedic injunctions, swanam, own families, he, certainly, va, of you, mai, me, anuvrittaye, to increase regard for. Abala, O women. Maya, by me. Kvaroksham, invisible. Bhajata, favoring. Charohitam, withdrawn from sight. Ma, me. Asuyatam, to be pleased with. Ma'ahata, you do not deserve. Tat, therefore. Priyam, who is dear. Priya, O dear ones. O my beloved gopis, you have renounced social customs, scriptural injunctions, and your relatives for my sake. I disappeared behind you, only to increase your concentration upon me. Since I disappeared for your benefit, you should not be displeased with me. Purport. This text is from Srimad Bhagavatam, spoken by Lord. This text from Srimad Bhagavatam was spoken by Lord Krishna when he returned to the arena of the Rasa Leela. Om Agena Chimananda Syaganandjana Shalakya Chakshan Vidikan Yinga Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha Jai Sri Krishna Chaitanya Pavurthananda Sri Advaita Galada Sivasati Goa Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama 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 Hare Hare. What is the background for Srila Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami quoting this verse from the 10th canto of Bhagavatam when Krishna returned to the arena of the Rasa dance? He's making the point how the gopis do not care for their own pleasures or pains. Whatever they do physically or mentally is simply for offering enjoyment to Lord Krishna. This is the attitude we're trying to develop in the preliminary stages of devotional service. We strive to act for Krishna's pleasure. We strive to learn sensitivity for what is most pleasing to Krishna. Just like any person, when dealing with any person, some things can be pleasing and some things more pleasing. So naturally, if you want to develop love, you try to do what is most pleasing. In the beginning of devotional service, there is that tendency to want to please yourself through bhakti. You want relief from material existence. You want peace for yourself. That's all right. But as you become more and more purified, you begin to realize that those motivations are quite unnecessary, because you'll get the best for yourself simply by thinking about the best for Krishna, because you're a part of Krishna. In the gopis' dealings with Krishna, there's no calculation. This is the best way to please ourselves. Therefore, we'll just focus on Krishna. Now, they're 100% simply thinking, what gives Krishna pleasure? And all their physical and mental activities are directed in that way. As Kaviraj Goswami explains, they renounced everything for Krishna. They have pure attachment to giving Krishna pleasure. Isn't that a wonderful thing? Pure attachment to giving Krishna pleasure. Yes, there is attachment. And that attachment is so intense, but it's spotless, free from any material contamination, because its goal is simply to give Krishna pleasure. This is what we're developing our spiritual lives for. This is what our hearts are hankering for. Pure attachment. There must be attachment, because we're sentient beings. Our problem, however, as you know, is that we are attached to matter, and therefore we undergo all kinds of unnecessary tribulations. Attachment to material, gross material things, and attachment to subtle material things. But once there is a pure attachment to giving Krishna pleasure, then we are living in reality. We're living in the real world. Now, what is the example that the gopis have renounced everything for Krishna? What's the example of their pure attachment for giving Krishna pleasure? Krishna himself will glorify their renunciation and their pure attachment. He does that in this verse we've chanted. Evam madartho jita loka veda swanam hivo mayam vittaye bhava Maya paroksham bhajata tirohitam masuyatam marhata tat priyam priya. O my beloved gopis, you have renounced social customs, scriptural injunctions, and your relatives for my sake. I disappeared behind you only to increase your concentration upon me. Since I disappeared for your benefit, you should not be displeased with me. In speaking about the gopis' pure renunciation and pure attachment for giving Krishna pleasure, you also are presented one of the greatest mysteries in Krishna Leela. Why did Krishna leave these devotees apparently? Why did Krishna go away from their vision? This would seem to be cruel. You can consider from the mundane platform, if you were attached to someone, and right when you were making your attachment known, they just disappeared. How would you feel? You would feel very wounded in your heart. You would get angry. At the moment when you were making your attachment known, expressing your feelings, then the person, the object of your love disappears without a word. So the question is, why did Krishna do that? Is this are these the dealings of the Supreme Personality of Godhead which will inspire us to want to advance in devotional life? Or will these dealings make us afraid? You give everything to Krishna and this is how he treats you? Just listen to Krishna's words. His very words that he speaks himself. Oh my dear ones, you have renounced social customs, scriptural injunctions, and your relatives for my sake. But then Krishna himself says, I disappeared. So we can have that fear that if we give up too much for Krishna, he may treat us in this way. Let us look into this mystery of Krishna's disappearing from the gopis' presence at the arena of the Rasa Leela. Krishna explained later when he reappeared that, yes, it does appear that I was cruel. Let's look at the facts. You renounced your worldly reputation. You renounced ordinary morality, as conventionally known. You renounced your families, your relatives. I didn't do that. I didn't give up my mother and father. You did more than me. I didn't do all that. But you did. That's why Krishna will say in later, quoted in Chaitanya Charitamrita, O gopis, I am not able to repay my debt for your spotless service, even within a lifetime of Brahma. Your connection with me is beyond reproach. You have worshipped me, cutting off all domestic ties, which are difficult to break. Therefore, please let your own glorious deeds be your compensation. It seemed that Krishna was being very heartless and cruel. Indeed, his dearest devotees seemingly accused him of that when Krishna reappeared. Like, what kind of lover are you? You don't reciprocate our love. You're indifferent. They're implying that. They were massaging Krishna's feet. They had spread their shawls of their saris on the smooth sandy bank of the Jamuna River. And Krishna sat down on the shawls, the top pieces of their saris, and they looked at him, trying to suppress their pure anger. Some of them were feeling that way. It's not material anger, though. And they were massaging Krishna's feet. And they asked him some questions, like, what do you say? There are different types of lovers. In other words, which type are you? And then Krishna explained himself that I know how to deal with my devotees. He explained to them that actually, I didn't go away. I was watching you all the time. Krishna explained that he wanted to see the gopis' feelings of pure love and separation. He was observing that. That was his motivation. And even though he was hidden from their sight, he was still reciprocating love with them. And that's why their feelings of separation became even more intense. And they indeed felt Krishna's presence through that those feelings of separation. Because Krishna was reciprocating with them from a hidden viewpoint. This is part of the mystery of Krishna's sudden disappearance from their sight. Krishna also wanted to display to the whole world the standard of pure love. He wanted the whole world to be able to see how the gopis have pure attachment to his pleasure. So by his disappearing, you could see this clearly as the gopis underwent their feelings of separation from him. Krishna wanted to advertise loud and clear that there's no greater devotees than these. Therefore he left them, apparently. And then there's another reason, as we see in today's verse. The Lord says, I disappeared behind you only to increase your concentration upon me. Since I disappeared for your benefit, you should not be displeased with me. Easily, this should let you know that this is not anything mundane. It has nothing to do with the exchange of material emotions, which are just a shadow of spiritual emotions. We always bring up the point. Can you imagine your beloved telling you, I left you for your benefit. I disappeared from your sight for your benefit. You would not accept that for a moment. Get out of here. I hate you. What a fool I was to have anything to do with you. Can you imagine someone telling you that? Someone you had given up everything for? And then the person tells you, after they've disappeared suddenly without warning, oh, I just did it for your benefit. You'd be very angry. You'd probably tell the person, well, if that's what you do out of care for me, I hate to see what you do when you don't care for me. But we're not dealing with this mundane platform of love and hate. We are dealing with the pure, spotless emotions of the spiritual world. How was Krishna acting for the benefit of the gopis? By leaving them, apparently? He was increasing their attachment. That's what the highest planet in the spiritual world is all about. Arrangements to infinitely, eternally increase the loving attachment. Krishna is the most expert at that. The activities of the Lord in creation, maintenance, and destruction of the universe are quite insignificant. But here, in these pastimes in Vrindavan, you see what Krishna's real specialty is. Increasing love unlimitedly, eternally. He knows how to do that. He knows how to churn the ocean of loving exchanges. He does that even by his leaving. Krishna explains himself. The acharyas point out. The Lord explained that my apparent disappearance from the sight of devotees is on two levels. First of all, he says, I do this for the practicing devotees, those who are performing sadhana bhakti, doing devotional service under rules and regulation. Krishna says, sometimes I apparently am not present with these devotees. Why? To increase their bhakti. Because such devotees will think, just see how unfortunate I am. Just see how useless I am. I can't even get a drop of Krishna's mercy. I'm chanting the holy name. I don't even have a drop of attachment. I'm trying to do so much service. It's always inconsequential and insignificant. The devotee thinks that humbly. And Krishna's pleased by that attitude. Because that attitude allows real bhakti to grow. Humility is what allows real bhakti to grow. So for the practicing devotee, Krishna can apparently remain hidden for some time. Just so you'll endeavor with humility. And get that feeling that, oh, I'm useless. I'm trying so hard, but apparently nothing comes of it. That humility is so precious. And therefore Krishna arranges that you feel that way. You don't give up. You continue endeavoring with great intensity, but at the same time you think yourself to be very inconsequential. I'm doing such a tiny bit of service. Others may think I'm doing a lot of service, but I can feel it. I haven't attracted the complete attention of Krishna, so what is the use? It is that kind of bhakti that Krishna wants to produce in you all. I've heard often from Sankirtan devotees that I'm going out day after day, I'm just not getting any results. One devotee in Auckland was telling me this. When I hear the other devotees and their results, I feel so bad because I'm doing so little, they're doing so much. It seems like a sad joke. But Krishna is watching your efforts. How hard you're trying. Krishna is the most expert at increasing love. A part of our envy of Krishna is that we think that's our department. Just give me a good situation, I'll increase the love. Give me the right person, the right place, the right time. I know what to do. I know how to create more love. This is our arrogance and our envy. Peacefulness begins when you admit you're a complete failure at trying to have loving affairs. Then you can actually begin to really love. But as long as you have that arrogance, I know how to love. Just show me. Just give me a chance. I'll show you. Just give me the right ingredients. Boom. It's going to be love. That arrogance prevents us from understanding Krishna. There's no comparison to Krishna's expertise in loving affairs. And there's no comparison to our ineptitude, our inability in loving affairs, although the ego is so great. So part of Krishna's expertise in loving affairs is that for practicing devotees, devotees who are in the stage of devotional service in practice, he can apparently not be present just so the devotee develops humility while continuously struggling and trying with complete determination. That humility, that humble bhakti that's produced is so tasty to Krishna. We may be trying to do devotional service to prove ourselves. Just see how competent I am. I can do this, I can do that. I have these skills, I have those skills. What would Lord Chaitanya's movement be without me? We may feel that way. But Krishna knows how to deal with that. He gradually shows the sincere devotee that what you really want is to feel completely helpless without my mercy. So I'll let you hang for a while. and apparently I'm not present, and you'll feel that all your endeavors are just so tiny. And then you'll be humble in devotional service. The Krishna knows how to do that for his practicing devotees. But then what about the devotees with praying? The gopis were the topmost in praying. What was Krishna's program with them? They're not practicing devotees. They're eternally liberated devotees, nitya siddhas, and also some of them are coming up from the ranks of conditioned souls. But once you're on the perfect platform, it doesn't matter where you came from. You know the example that so many rivers may pour into the ocean, but once they pour into the ocean, they're known as waters of that ocean. Similarly, there may be different routes to perfection, but once there, you're there. So when Krishna travels throughout the universes with his display of pastimes, he brings eternally liberated associates with him from the spiritual world, and also some coming up from the ranks of the conditioned souls participate in the pastimes too. They're learning on-the-job training. They're learning by association with the eternally liberated associates. As you know, generally when a devotee leaves this world for going back to Godhead, he first goes to the universe where Krishna is having his pastimes in the material world and joins Krishna's party there and becomes further trained. Of course, Krishna is never in the material world. His pastimes are never a product of the material world or touched by the material world. It's like the rainbow. The rainbow appears to rest on the earth at both ends. But if you try to find out where it is that the rainbow is touching the ground and resting, you won't find any place because the rainbow actually doesn't rest on the earth, even though it seems to be visible. Similarly, Krishna, he comes to this world, but he never rests on this world. He never touches it. For the devotees who have prem, Krishna says he disappears to increase their attachment. They have pure love of Krishna, and they have Krishna, and then they get the feeling that they've lost Krishna. Just like a wealthy person, a poor person who's been poor for so many years and then suddenly becomes wealthy and then loses that wealth, will think of that lost wealth night and day. Similarly, those who have prem and they have Krishna's association, when they apparently lose it, their attachment increases. So Krishna does that on purpose. So in this way, he acts both for the practicing devotees and for the devotees with fully developed prem. He acts to increase. In the first case, he acts to increase their humility, their humble devotional service. And in the case of the perfected devotees, he acts to increase their attachment. Therefore, as he's saying in this verse, I disappeared for your benefit. Therefore, you should not be displeased with me. But you think that? Could you tell Bridget, I disappeared for your benefit? Would you accept that, Bridget? No. How does disappearing help me? I want you around. Things to be done around the house. I need some company, someone to talk to. How can you disappear for my benefit? You're supposed to be adding value to my life. Right? But Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, can actually say, I disappeared for the benefit of my dearest devotees, so that they would increase their attachment for me. read from Chaitanya Charitamrita. Lord Krishna has a promise from before to reciprocate with his devotee according to the way they worship him. And then the verse from the Bhagavad Gita is quoted. Ye yatam mam prapajyante tam sutaiva bhajamyaham mama vartma anuvartante manusha parta sarvasha. In whatever way my devotees surrender unto me, I reward them accordingly. Everyone follows my path in all respects, O son of Brita. Often, as you know, this verse is misinterpreted. Impersonalist, New Agey types will say, just see, in your Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, everyone's on the path, no matter what they do. Everyone's following the path. All the paths lead the same place. Everyone's on the path. What's the big deal? But we can use logic to point out quite easily the fallacy. Suppose everyone is traveling on the motorway. So, in that sense, everyone is on the path. But some people are going fast toward the destination. Others are going slow. Some have broken down and they're on the side of the road. They're not going anywhere. Others are going the opposite way. The path has two directions, you know, up and down. So those who say everyone is on the path, they're all going the same place, they forget, you know. You can be on a road and going forward or backwards. Or you can be making no progress at all, broken down on the side. So yes, in a broad sense, you can say everyone is on Krishna's path. But some have stopped at the side of the road and become mired in Kali Yuga. Others are pushing forward. Others are trying to get away from Krishna. They're going the opposite way. It's all on the road. It's all on the path. But they're going the wrong way. Now, for the gopis, they're Krishna's dearest devotees. How is Krishna going to reciprocate with them? Lord Chaitanya has certified Ramya Kachcha Upasana Rajavadu Vargenirna Kalpita. There's no better way, there's no higher way of loving Krishna than that shown by the cowherd girls of Vrindavan. Not only the young gopis, but also the elderly gopis who had Vatsalya Ras, parental love for Krishna. There's no better way of loving Krishna than shown by them. Apparently, Krishna's promise to reciprocate with the devotee as the devotee treats Krishna, apparently that promise has been broken in relation to the gopis. Krishna even admits this, apparently. O gopis, I am not able to repay my debt for your spotless service, even within a lifetime of Brahma. Your connection with me is beyond reproach. You have worshipped me, cutting off all domestic ties, which are difficult to break. Therefore, please, let your own glorious deeds be your compensation. So what is this all about? Krishna saying, I can't do what I said in Bhagavad Gita. In Bhagavad Gita I said, as you surrender to me, I treat you. As you act toward me, I reciprocate toward you. But in your case, I can't do that. Your service is so spotless and so pure. I can't pay you back. What does all that mean? When Krishna spoke that to the gopis, the acharyas explained, the gopis understood. Apparently, we were criticizing Krishna, asking him to talk about the different types of lovers. In this way, we were implying that Krishna was not treating us nicely. But now we can see that Krishna has defeated us with his love. How has he defeated our love with his love? Because he wanted to demonstrate our super excellence to everyone. He wanted to publicize this spotless nature of our love. And secondly, he wanted to add an element of indebtedness to make the love even sweeter. I am indebted to you. I can't repay you. This is feeling. Pure feelings are in the pure spiritual world. So, this feeling of, I can't pay you back, I'm completely indebted to you. This is very powerful in loving affairs. Even from the material, mundane point of view, you can glimpse that a bit. So Krishna wanted to give that feeling to his dearest devotees. I am indebted to you. I can't pay you back. So the gopis recognize this. Yes, Krishna's doing all this for us. He's advertising our pure love, making us the standard. And he's also enriching our emotional exchanges with this feeling of indebtedness. We're defeated by his love. And then what does Krishna say? I can't repay you. Therefore, please let your own glorious deeds be your compensation. In other words, please just be satisfied by your devotional service. Is Krishna shortchanging them by saying that? Just be satisfied with your service? No, because devotional service is the means by which you can conquer Krishna. That's the mystery of Bhagavatam. That's the mystery of Bhakti Yoga. Apparently it seems Krishna is slighting them. I can't repay you even with the lifetime of Brahma, 311 trillion years. You can't even conceive of that. I can't repay you. Just be satisfied with your devotional service. Ordinarily, that looks like a slight. You can imagine, Matt, you're telling Bridget, I can't repay you for your dedication and what a wonderful wife you've been. So just be satisfied cleaning the house and take... What would you think? Just be satisfied with the service you do around the home. I admit it's glorious. You've done so many things for me. I can't repay you. So just keep the house clean and be satisfied with that. This shows you how we cannot understand Krishna and Krishna's dealings with mundane senses. He's telling the gopis, just be satisfied with your own service. But through that service, you conquer Krishna. Mother Yashoda is able to bind Krishna with a rope because of her service. The gopis are even able to speak reproaching words to Krishna because of devotional service. And Krishna relishes that. He relishes being chastised by his mother, corrected by his mother and father. And he relishes the sulking words from his consorts. And they know that, so therefore they behave in that way, just to give Krishna pleasure. So these are the mysteries of Bhagavatam and Bhakti Yoga, which takes some maturity and development in Krishna consciousness to properly appreciate the significance. Now Kaviraj Goswami goes on to explain, whatever affection we see the gopis show for their own bodies, know it for certain to be only for the sake of Lord Krishna. Remember, the bodies of the gopis are purely spiritual. There's no matter. In the purport, Srila Prabhupada carefully explains to us, the selfless love of Godhead exhibited by the gopis cannot have any parallel. We should not, therefore, misunderstand the carefulness of the gopis in their personal direction, in their personal decoration. The gopis dress themselves as beautifully as possible just to make Krishna happy by seeing them. They had no ulterior desires. They dedicated their bodies and everything they possessed to the service of Sri Krishna, taking it for granted that their bodies were meant for his enjoyment. They dressed themselves with the understanding that Krishna would be happy by seeing and touching them. This is a very striking example of pure devotion, because generally when someone dresses themselves, they're doing it to enhance their ego. I think others will think I'm very beautiful, and then I'll get a feeling of ego enhancement. I'll be known as the best. I'll get some pleasure out of it. But when Krishna's dearest devotees would decorate themselves, it was 100% for Krishna's pleasure. Completely selfless. 100%. Sometimes in this world, you see, people say, I'm dressing for the other. Indeed, in grihastha life, household life, the wife dresses nicely for the pleasure of the husband. It perks up the male psychology to know they have a prettily dressed wife. So it's part of Veda culture that the wife dresses attractively just to refresh the mind of the husband. But there's always some selfishness about that. There's always some thought, I'm going to get something for me out of this. I'll feel good that, yeah, just see how I look. And then there's always the hope that by dressing yourself and decorating yourself nicely, you'll attract attention for yourself and get to fulfill your desires. This is a practical example that Kaviraj Goswami is giving. That when the gopis dressed and decorated themselves, it was 100% selfless. They dressed themselves purely with the understanding that Krishna would be happy by seeing them. Everything they had was meant for Krishna's pleasure, 100%. Let us go on reading. The gopis think, I have offered this body to Lord Krishna. He is its owner, and it brings him enjoyment. Krishna finds joy in seeing and touching this body. It is for this reason that they cleanse and decorate their bodies. We practice to attain this opportunity for beginning to love Krishna in this way by considering everything that we have as belonging to Krishna. It's like Bhaktivinoda Thakur sings in his song, Manasa Deho Geho Yogi Chimo Apilantuya Pare Nanda Kishore. O youthful son of Maharaj Nanda, my mind, my body, my home, whatever I have, it belongs to you. So you see now how things start and where they end up. I would like that you have a feeling of continuity for bhakti development. Once you get that feeling of continuity and you can see the whole spectrum of development, then you can understand more why you're doing what you're doing now. If now, at your particular level of advancement in devotional service, you consider everything to belong to Krishna, then that feeling intensifies as you advance in Krishna consciousness, and the pinnacle of that intensification is this gopi bhava, in which they consider 100% everything they have, even their spiritual bodies, to belong to Krishna. Now let's go to another wonder that Chaitanya Charitamrita is going to point out to us. An emotional wonder. There's another wonderful feature of the emotion of the gopis. Its power is beyond the comprehension of the intelligence. So what is that emotional wonder? When the gopis see Krishna, they get unlimited happiness. But they have no desire for their own happiness. How is this? They see Krishna and they're unlimitedly happy, but they don't have any desire to be happy. What are they desiring then? They're simply desiring the happiness of Krishna. But then why are they happy if they're not desiring their own happiness? That is another mystery of bhakti, which will become apparent in these verses. The gopis taste the pleasure 10 million times greater than the pleasure Lord Krishna derives from seeing them. The Prabhupada explains in the purport that the gopis have no desire for personal satisfaction. Yet when Krishna is happy by seeing them, that happiness of Krishna makes the gopis happy. In fact, it makes them 1 million times more happy than Krishna himself. So now you're getting deep insight into what is pure devotional service. And just by hearing these verses from Chaitanya Charitamrita, you become inspired to begin your developing in this way. This gift is so sublime that a devotee feels, I don't care how many births it takes, I want to develop the standard of pure love. The gopis have no desire for their own happiness, yet when they see that Krishna is happy by looking at them, their happiness, the happiness of Krishna, that happiness of Krishna makes them 1 million times more happy than Krishna himself. Of course, then the question is, well, does that mean Krishna is defeated in love? The gopis are 1 million times more happy than him, and they don't even think about their own happiness. But then, of course, Krishna comes as Lord Chaitanya in the mood of the gopis, and that way he... The gopis have no inclination for their own enjoyment, and yet their joy increases. That is indeed a contradiction. So what's going on then? They have no inclination for their own enjoyment, and yet their joy increases when they see Krishna. What is the solution to this paradox? The solution is that the joy of the gopis lies in the joy of their beloved Krishna. This seems perplexing. Their happiness is that Krishna is happy. Their happiness can't be separated even in the slightest from Krishna's happiness. When they see Krishna happy, they become happy that Krishna is happy. And when Krishna sees that they're happy because he's happy, then his happiness increases. And when his happiness increases, then their happiness increases. And then Krishna's happiness increases. And then it goes on and on eternally like that. When Lord Krishna sees the gopis, his joy increases. And his unparalleled sweetness increases also. The gopis think, Krishna has obtained so much pleasure by seeing me. That thought increases the fullness and beauty of their faces and bodies. The beauty of Lord Krishna increases at the sight of the beauty of the gopis. And the more the gopis see Lord Krishna's beauty, the more their beauty increases. In this way, a competition takes place between them in which no one acknowledges defeat. It just goes on and on eternally. So you've learned that when the gopis see Krishna's pleasure at seeing them, then their joy increases. In other words, their joy nourishes the joy of Lord Krishna. In that way, there's no fault of lust in their love. Their joy is pure and selfless. It's simply 100% for increasing Krishna's joy. Prabhupada explains in the purport, by looking at the beautiful gopis, Krishna becomes enlivened. And this looking by Krishna at the beautiful gopis enlivens the gopis. whose youthful faces and bodies blossom. This competition of increasing beauty between the gopis and Krishna, which is without limitations, is so delicate that sometimes mundane moralists mistake these dealings to be purely amorous, be material. But these affairs are not at all mundane, because the gopis' intense desire to satisfy Krishna surcharges the entire scene with pure love of Godhead, with not a spot of sexual indulgence. Their intense desire to satisfy Krishna surcharges the whole scene with pure love of God. This is bhakti. This is what it means to be a devotee. So, are there any questions? Yes.
Sometimes the Christians ask that if Krishna's Atmarama, if he's self-satisfied, then why does he expand himself into other living entities?
That's to himself, and it's to enjoy pleasure. Nothing's outside of Krishna. He's relying on himself. His expansions are himself. In one sense, Radha and Krishna are one, but they'd be eternally separated for Krishna's pleasure. The Lord is never different from his internal potency. Even the material energy is also belonging to Krishna. At the highest stages of bhakti, even the material energy reminds you instantly of Krishna. That's why Krishna asks you to begin that understanding by remembering he's the taste of the water, he's the light of the sun and the moon. That's the beginning of seeing the material energy as belonging to Krishna. And that remembrance will get so intense that at one point in bhakti development, the material energy will completely bring to you the presence of Krishna. So that's the high stages of bhakti. Yeah.
When we maybe hear about the desires of the advanced devotees, so like either just like hearing about the gopis or just even advanced devotees in ISKCON and the standard of devotion, wanting to just please Krishna's senses and be absorbed in service, that may not be very attractive in the sense that it's like a bit inconceivable or so far from where we are, overwhelming. So how does one, if one's not really attracted to it, how does one advance forward to that?
When you were 5 years old, could you conceive of what it was like to be a teenager? The teenagers were inconceivable to you, weren't they? Did you ever watch them when you were 5 years old? What did you think?
This seemed very intimidating for me. Wow, impressive and intimidating.
I remember my little brother and I watched the teenagers, and we watched them walking down the street with their girlfriends and boyfriends, and just couldn't figure it out. What are these guys into? It doesn't make any sense. Well, they play with trucks or something, you know, toy trucks, and play with model cars, and what are you walking down the street with a girl for? Useless. They should be playing cowboys and Indians and cops and robbers and something like that. Can't do that with girls. You know, fun. It's all inconceivable to us. But I didn't finish. But
When you were five, teenagers were inconceivable to you. How many years did it take before things became quite conceivable? Short time. So, similarly in bhakti, what seems unattainable to you now, 5 or 6 years, you might have a much greater glimpse of. You say when you were 5 years old, teenagers were incomprehensible to you, inconceivable. Well, just 6 years later, it all started to make sense, right? Yeah, I can see why they're acting like that. Just 6 years later. So, 6 years from now, who can say what your realizations will be?
It seems that if, growth of a child to a teenager is just destined to happen by age or, by hormones, but in devotional service, if you don't have the desire or you don't have the attraction, I can still be where I am now in 10 years' time because I just choose to make my decisions or make my spiritual... I mean, I just basically choose to limit myself.
Choose to stay in the rut.
Yeah.
True? No relationship can progress without activities to deepen the relationship. Relationships in this world take work. Maybe when you're a young teenager, you just think boy-girl affairs are just some kind of spontaneous thing where it all just works out. And then later, you realize relationships take a lot of energy, right? First you just think it's going to be pure rapture. He'll say something, and I'll say something. He'll look in my eyes, I'll look in his eyes. He'll know what I'm thinking, I'll know what he's thinking. Hear the violins in the background. And then after a while you realize relationships are hard work. Communication. You gotta sit down and talk about this. I don't think I meant what you thought that I meant. Oh, really? Well, I'm not even sure what I meant, but I'm sorry you took it that way. Well, it's not that I took it in that way, but I thought that you meant that, and if I took it in that way, and this gets all complicated, I'm talking, you know? So even in an ordinary relationship, it takes so much effort. How can you do that for Krishna, who's unlimitedly attractive? Otherwise, you will try for something in the material world. You'll work anyway. You'll struggle anyway. For fame, for your own gratification, for reputation, for money. You have... The living entity has this nature to achieve something. So you have to know what the real wealth is. So it's not that you're just going to, well, about Krishna consciousness, I'll just let that stay on the shelf and, you know, I just won't do anything. No, you must do something. That's what Krishna told Arjuna and Mother Gita. At the end, he said, if you don't act under my direction, don't think you're going to just do nothing. You'll act under Maya's direction. Just take your choice, but you have to. Push forward. So if you don't allow yourself to be surcharged with the bhakti goals, then Maya will come through the door and surcharge you with Maya goals. As simple as that. This is the basic Bhagavad Gita. If you just keep yourself in the vicinity of devotees and the hearing and chanting process, the spiritual hormones will carry you along. Yes. Just keep yourself where there's devotional service, where this is association with devotees, hearing and chanting, then you'll be carried along. That's the intelligence they have to do next. If, out of humility, you feel, oh, I just don't have what it takes to advance in Krishna consciousness, but I'm going to stick with this association of devotees and devotional service to be carried on. Just like often, well, not often, I think, but sometimes there are girls or boys, teenagers, who have no desire for the opposite sex, but because of association, they just get caught in all that. Even they might not have their own desire to take drugs, but because of association, it happens. Just like the former president of the USA, Clinton, when reports surfaced that when he was a university student, he smoked marijuana. That's how he came up with his typically clever response. Well, I put it in my mouth, but I did not inhale. Look, he was in fact saying, I was just caught up with the crowd, I was innocent, I put it in my mouth, but I did not inhale. So many things can happen, even without your desire, just by your association. So if you associate with devotees, you will catch fire. That's the easy way to go about it. Use your intelligence to engineer your life so that devotional service and devotees are always at the center. And you'll do well. Make life easy for yourself. If you stick to the process of devotional service properly, every year is a wonder. Only a devotee can look back at the preceding year and think, wow, I didn't have anything there. This is going to go on all your life. Because there's always more and more Krishna to realize. The ocean of pure devotional service is bottomless. So, year after year, if you stick to the process of devotional service properly, you'll be able to look back just on the preceding year and wonder, where was my consciousness at? I was really out of it. This is a luxury that non-devotees don't have. You can look back on last year as a devotee and say, I was so un-Krishna conscious last year. The way I dealt with devotees, the way I dealt with the holy name, I was dull. This is going to go on and on and on. This is the luxury of Krishna consciousness. Even the preceding year looks so distant and substandard. If you properly maintain your devotional standards. Now, I guess it's true sometimes devotees can look back and think, last year I was doing much better. That may happen if they are not strict. But if you maintain your dedication properly, you'll be able to look at each passing year and think, where was I at last year? I could have done so much better. That's the luxury of a devotee. The devotees are humble. They always think, I'm not doing anything now. It's like in Auckland, every Varshan Prana was telling me. He was watching the devotees from the Auckland Loft. They were fixing up the place for the yoga course. And in Russia, and promising my wife and I were watching, and we were remembering the days when we were like that, when we were focused, when we were completely dedicated. I said, come on, you're like that now, everyone knows. But that's just the way a devotee, that's a natural expression of a devotee's humility. Oh, they're doing so much better than me. I'm just a fallen householder. He's thinking that way, but actually everyone knows he's first-class householder. But every devotee always feels like that. It's not a put-on that we say that I'm fallen and others will think I'm great. For whose I'm really fallen. No, as you advance in devotional service, you actually feel that way. And you feel other devotees are so much better. world of bhakti emotions is so much more satisfying and rich than the paltry, weak emotions of the material world. You see, the living entity craves intensity, absorption. That is found in bhakti, in so-called intensity and absorption that the world of Maya offers. It is so depressing, frustrating, illusory. So just remember that you crave intensity. You want intensely absorbing experiences. Everyone does. That's why in kirtan, you feel that intense absorption. You're associating with Krishna. This is what the soul craves, intense absorption. The material world offers that to you. Just do this. You'll be intensely absorbed. But there's always disastrous, there are always disastrous results. Frustration, anger, let down, depression. And you get angry at something that, or someone who promises absorption, or who you thought would give absorption, they don't. When a thing doesn't, you get angry. You ever had that feeling? You didn't deliver intensity. You didn't deliver the goods. False hope, false advertising. Because nothing in the material world can deliver intensity that satisfies the soul.
Attachment to ego enhancing activities. You might understand in one angle that by practicing Krishna consciousness, detachment comes naturally. And then, on another hand, there's the one of the 10 offenses in which I'm the whole name to maintain material attachments. Even after understanding some of the instructions on this matter. So, how do we apply ourselves to the problem of attachment?
If you chant Hare Krishna properly with attention, then yes, we become detached naturally. The constant effort to chant the holy name with attention detaches you from material existence. If someone's concentrating on trying to hear what you say, that means they won't be able to pay attention to what others say. Similarly, if you're concentrating on the holy name, your attachment for other things will decrease. If you try to hear the Hare Krishna mantra, you cannot maintain material attachment. Because just that effort to hear the holy name every day will cause you to modify your whole life so that the holy name has the number one prior position, has pride of place in your life. You may say, I'm just trying to hear the holy name, but how does that cut down on attachment? But just day after day of trying to hear the holy name takes modification and remodification of your lifestyle. You're always adjusting. I gotta do a bit of this, do a bit of that, keep the holy name in proper focus. Constant lifestyle engineering. So that way, you naturally decrease material attachment just because you're trying to hear the holy name every day. You have to adjust your eating, you have to adjust your sleeping. After you pass out of the stage of being a new devotee, you don't eat big feasts late at night. Because, it will affect my chanting in the morning. But when you're a new devotee, you go for it. So we let the new devotees just pack your belly's a facade, so I can't walk. Anytime, any day. But as you become an older devotee, you realize that if I pack my belly with a wonderful feast at 10 o'clock at night, and, you know, it comes Java time in the morning, I'm not going to be hearing very nicely. So trying to hear the holy name every day will modify your whole life.
In the beginning, I got Krishna consciousness when I hear the envious of Krishna. Well, we don't really know much about Krishna, so perhaps we see the envy. But when we read and we know a little bit more about Krishna, we can see how amazing he is. Then we can see how see the envy in the heart. So, say if you're envious of somebody and you don't really want to be, you don't want to hear about that person, or you don't want to be in the same room with that person. So what's to stop us from, once we realise how we're in with Krishna, to not want to see that or hear about it?
Once you realize you're envious of Krishna, what's the start?
Once we can see that envy, because say in the material world, if we're envious of someone, we don't really want to hear about them, or we don't want to be in the same room.
Oh, that's why in sadhana bhakti, you hear about Krishna under injunction. You must. But do you feel like it or not? That breaks through the envy, that regulation. That's why we have devotional service according to rules and regulations. So that, never mind how you feel, you do this. And then gradually the natural feelings will develop and become prominent. Therefore, if you constantly, daily, keep in touch with Krishna's glories, your envy of Krishna will become reduced and extinguished. And why do you constantly, every day, hear Krishna's glories? Because that's the prescribed method of devotional service. This is the value of rules and regulations. They protect you and give you a chance to develop your spontaneous feelings. Serve devotees. By always serving devotees, you're protected from pride. Yeah, if you're a sankirtan, if you're a book distributor, when you start thinking you're something great, just go out the street, we'll see what happens. Sankirtan is a wonderful cure for pride. Krishna easily works you over. That's why Sankirtan is so wonderful. Such a purifying service. And you serve devotees. Everyone can serve devotees. No matter what the situation they're in. They're working a job, they have a family, still you can serve devotees. By serving devotees, you begin to appreciate their glories. Once you start to appreciate devotees, appreciate their glories, then naturally you want to glorify them. In this way, the envy becomes cured. The pride becomes reduced. You're sincerely trying to see how devotees are so much better than you. devotees thinks he or she is insignificant and the other devotees are better. They're thinking, oh, I'm not doing so much service, I have to go to university, and this and that. Try to do service in my spare time. The other devotees looking at you and say, oh, she's so fortunate, she wasn't a party girl. Devotees are always looking at the other devotee and thinking, more fortunate. You may be thinking, oh, I come from Korea. There's so few Korean devotees. Other devotees will look at you and say, oh, but you didn't do all the wild things that we did, even in countries where there were so many devotees. So everyone always looks at the other devotee as better. And whatever you do, by Krishna's grace, there's always unlimited more service to do. If you distribute 50 books in one day, there are persons who can distribute easily 100 books in one day. So, what's there to be proud of? There's always so much more to be done. Someone gives you a donation for $100,000. Other devotees are getting donations for $100,000. What's the point in getting proud? Now everyone's happy. Oh, this is a nice gathering of 40 devotees. Other places, they have gatherings of thousands of devotees. In Ukraine, the festival is 2,000 devotees. Of course, it's a much bigger country, but still, a devotee feels that. Whatever we're doing, it's just a drop in the bucket. Comes with a mode of goodness, rises above passion and ignorance, becomes stable in goodness. And from the mode of goodness, you make your step to the purely spiritual platform. There's nothing that replaces regulation. Regulation, there'll be steadiness, because the regulation enforces steadiness, so that gradually the steadiness comes from within instead of without. Just like a child learns to ride a bicycle first with the training wheels, and then when you become accustomed, they take the training wheels away and the child can naturally balance himself. So you must have your training wheels, and then later the balance will come from within. First, it must come from without. So if you don't allow the balance to come from without, you'll never develop it from within. In that way, sadhana bhakti, the regulation, is mercy. Therefore, we have so many young men. They come to Wellington. They live in the Dharma Karuna Ashram for the purpose of getting a taste for regulation. And they're coming from the wild party scene, or they're coming, you know, from the drug scene, or the university scene, which is also party and drugs. and they're coming from the place of, you know, thinking they're together. I was competent, I'm going to have to do it. Yeah. A good career ahead of me. Yeah. Yeah. And then they take up a regulated life of devotional service. And they begin to see. And I'm not so together as I think. So this contemporary Vedic ashram is a good intermediate point. And there the young men can sort themselves out and see what their future is. Is it going to be Brahmachari life? Is bachelor for a while, they can get a grip on themselves and get a vision for how they're going to progress in their future. And I've seen it takes often at least a year, many times 2 years, 3 years. But that's the greatest asset to become stable and get a grip on yourself. So these contemporary Vedic ashrams are doing a great service. In the old days, the Krishna Kasa movement, it still happens in many places. You were just a Miri throwing saffron on you, throwing you an ashram. Never put a Brahmacharya ashram. That's it. That's the only alternative. Otherwise, you're in my house. Could you have handled that? Could we be taking guys like Dwayne and Steve and Leon and Matt. And as soon as they touch some Java beats, shave their heads and put on the saffron clothes, you're a Brahmachari. Yeah, it would be a bit of a joke. But now, as the Krishna conscious movement in some places is getting more mature, we know that people need some time to stabilize. Prabhupada himself said that in the 70s, but we didn't listen to him. We were just too young. He said, better persons do not live in, Brahmacharya ashram until they have properly developed a voluntary feeling for austerity by studying the books at home. Better wait until they properly solidify. But we were all young back then, and so, wanted everybody to immediately, come on in. So I've described that. You'd be on traveling sankirtan in some small town in the middle of nowhere in the USA, and you'd meet a nice person, young person. Immediately after preaching for 2 hours, okay, Bill, are you going to give it all up? Come with us. Just get the man, Bill. That's all it takes. We'll drive you back to the temple. 8 hours away, just shock it all, Bill. You've heard, you understand. You've been speaking to you for 2 whole hours. You know it's right, Bill. You know this is what you want. And undoubtedly, Bill would say, but I have a girlfriend. Forget that, Maya Devi, Bill. Just jump in the van. Poor Grace says, Bill, let me show you this. They're tigers by day and witches by night. For different reasons, Close it with him. Nine times over. Of course, he's been practicing Krishna dance for a while. But in the 70s, right away, as soon as you meet someone, come on, Bill. It's 2 whole hours we've been talking to you. We've got to drive back to the temple, 8 hours away. Here's your chance, Bill. This chance may not come for many, many births. Am I going to get in the van, Bill? We've got the clippers waiting. He would be actually thinking, because, during that time, during the countercultural days, it wasn't unusual for someone just to take off somewhere. But still, it was quite a decision. Okay, Bill. It's 8:30. 8:30, we have our milk and Krishna greeting. 9 o'clock, we take rest. Bill, you gotta make your decision for your morning. Is it Maya or is it Krishna? That's the way it was. Of course, that youthful enthusiasm, you know, did a lot. You know, we didn't know any better. And we were just doing the best we could. Srila Prabhupada was the master doing the best he could for Krishna with whatever Krishna sent him. You know, what can you do when you have an international organization with practically almost no leaders over 30 years old? That's what it was. Yeah, the movement of, you know, spanning the globe, you know, properties everywhere, and in fact, you know, it was over 30. It's kind of amazing when you think about it. Prabhupada was the only adult. So this contemporary Vedic ashram is our mature contribution to spreading Lord Chaitanya's movement, and it's proved very effective.
Does he go anywhere Krishna's present in his form as Krishna, or if Krishna's present and Lord Chaitanya in the name?
There's no difference between Krishna and Lord Chaitanya. Lord Chaitanya has his own section on Krishna Loka planet. There's no difference. Lord Chaitanya is Radha Krishna combined. Just like Krishna goes to every universe in rotation, Lord Chaitanya also does. Yes, Lord Chaitanya always does Sankirtan. So it is a pure devotional desire for a devotee to think that he takes birth again and go on distributing Srila Prabhupada's books. That's pure devotion. Not that if we go back to God for my own benefit, but no. If Krishna wants, I'll take birth again. That's pure devotion. All right. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna.